Voices came through clearly.
Appreciate your cooperation, Sorsha was saying. It's no trouble at all.
Dr. Nakis,
as you can see in this chart, there are a number of phases associated with the progression of LZ1.
Portia had called and left the line open so I could hear what was going on. What a marvelous, clever woman. I did a happy boogie that warmed me up for about 3 seconds. Then I went back to bouncing, hugging, and listening. Sorsha was being very nice, and everyone else was being super cooperative, using the be accommodating and maybe she'll go away faster tactic. A phone rang in the lab.
Would you excuse me one moment, Agent Aberdeen? Dr. Nakis said.
She murmured assent.
I see,
he said after a few seconds, I assumed to the caller. His voice was grave, so I doubted it was good news.
I will review the details shortly, thank you.
Is everything all right? Sorsha asked politely.
Ah, yes, everything is fine,
he replied in a tone that oozed not fine.
A young intern of mine had a hypothesis concerning an entirely unrelated subject, and I've just learned that there is evidence to support it.
Oh, man. Dr. Nakis was a terrible liar. Could he be talking about me and my mosquito bite hunch? If so, did that mean he'd confirmed LZ1 was being deliberately spread?
Speaking of young interns, Sorsha said, I was under the impression that a Miss Angel Crawford had been working with you here. Is she around?
Fuck. Oh dear, she just left, Portia said, a billion times more convincing than Dr. Nakis. Then again, it wasn't a total lie. I had indeed left the room.
Ah, that's too bad. I'll have to catch her later.
Gah! Did she mean literally?
Dr. Nakis, Sorsha said,
I'd like you to give me an idea of what you're doing to counter the LZ1 epidemic.
Certainly.
He launched into an exuberant explanation of the progress of the disease and the search for a way to treat it, masterfully steering clear of anything zombie-related. When Dr. Nakis referred to the chart and started an explanation of the LZ1 signs and symptoms, which I figured would take at least a minute, I put Portia's call on hold and listened to my dad's voicemail.
Hey, Angelkins. I guess you're busy. That's okay, because I can tell you here just as well. I'm level 19 now with Barney the Barbarian, and Andrew found me in the game because last time I told him I was this guy and not your mom's on beat gal. Anyway, he said that this Harlan Murtaugh character has worked for Christy here and there on Saberton's dime and was doing stuff for her just a couple of weeks ago. But he don't know if he's working for her right now. It ain't much, but I figured it can't hurt to pass it along. Shoot me a text so I know you got this. Love you.
Hot damn. Confirming any sort of connection between Christy and Baldy was more than I had before. I texted back. You did good, Dad. Thanks. I returned to Portia's call as Dr. Nakis was winding up his explanation of the hungry phase. I expected Sorsha to ask him about zombies like she had with Christy, but though she bombarded him with questions about LZ1 and his research, she never once brought up the subject of zombies. Was that good or bad?
And how do you like working with Dr. Charish? Sorsha asked. Her assistance has been most helpful in this endeavor,
Dr. Nakis replied without hesitation. I let myself chortle since no one could hear me. Her assistance. Ha!
No, Sorsha said. How do you like working with her, personally?
I sent Dr. Nakis a thought wave of think on your feet, good liar juju, while Sorsha remained silent. Dr. Nakis cleared his throat.
We have very, different personalities. But she is brilliant, and our work together can be...
Different how? Poor Dr. Nikas. He was used to the calm sanctuary of his lab. He sighed as if resigned to his fate.
Dr. Charish can be self-absorbed, calculating, arrogant, snide, heartless, and willfully cruel. I can only hope I am none of those.
I grinned and did a fist pump. He'd used all my adjectives except bitchy and added a few of his own. Go doctor in.
And yet, you are still willing to work with her?
Sorsha asked, voice reflecting nothing more than mild curiosity.
Dr. Charish is also clever, innovative, highly educated, and experienced, he replied. I can think of no other who is equal to the task we currently face.
I see, Sorsha said.
Would you give me a layman's explanation of the work you and Dr. Charish have done, specifically with the alligators?
There has been very little work as of yet, he said. But if you will step over to this terminal, I will show you what I can.
Christy had certainly been doing some work, nasty work. Andrew's info on Harlan Murtaugh's connection to her brought me right back to my suspicion that she was involved in this entire mess. Sure, I had no real proof yet, and sure, Brian had a solid point about Christy not being able to sneeze without the tribe knowing. But Murtaugh's presence in the swamp and hospital meant the LZ-1 disaster had to be the work of either Christy or Saberton, or both. Plus, Saberton and Christy were the only ones in the world besides Dr. Nikas who had the kind of zombie research experience needed to pull off an epidemic like this. But there was no way Christy would stand back and let Saberton get the glory for a cure without her, which meant it had to be Christy at the helm. Except Brian said he'd seen her get off that jet when it landed at Tucker Point Airport night before last. Well after the Saberton gator hunt and after Shambler started shambling. That didn't rule out her involvement, but it was a factor that had to be considered. The back of my neck prickled, and it wasn't goosebumps. Randy had been repairing a private jet the other day. How many jets could a tiny airport like Tucker Point get in such a short time? Christy supposedly arrived Wednesday midnight. Randy's repair had come in on Monday. I put the call with Portia on low-volume speaker so I could keep monitoring it, then texted Randy. Hey, that jet you were repairing, where was it from? How the fuck should I know? He had a point. I tried another tack. What time did it come in Monday? 4 or so. Did you see who got off? Bald guy and some brown hair lady. The bald guy could be Harlan Murtaugh. Then again, there were a lot of bald guys around, and Christy was unmistakably blonde. Okay, what about a jet that came in Wednesday midnight? What the fuck is this about? Damn it. Please trust me, I need to know. You lucky. I was finishing up work on the Monday jet when other jet came in. Blonde lady and a big dude missing an ear got off. Christy and Fritz, just like Brian said. I sighed. Maybe Christy really wasn't. Then brown hair lady left on the Monday jet but wasn't same. Huh? Wasn't same what? Looked almost same but different. Huh? What the fuck are you talking about? Brown hair lady on Monday was a rude bitch. I thought the Wednesday brown hair lady was same lady, but she was real nice. I took a few seconds to parse his meaning. Are you saying you thought the brown-haired women were the same person, except she was an a-hole the first time? Yeah, and just a little different. Dunno. I thought furiously for a moment. Was blonde nice or bitch? Super nice. Holy shit. Thanks, millions. I realize now that the phone line had gone dead. Sorsha must have left, and so Portia hung up. Perfect timing. I bust out of the walk-in. She has a double! Brian sighed and pinched his nose. Portia gave me a pained look and whispered,
"Battery died. Sorry."
Someone cleared their throat behind me. I winced, then composed myself, and turned to Sorsha.
"Agent Aberdeen! So nice to see you. Sorry I missed your arrival. I use the fridge as my quiet spot to meditate, you know?"
She looked unconvinced. Probably my shivering and blue lips gave me away. Or maybe it was the ridiculous lie. Either way, she appeared unsurprised to see me. I stood as tall as my not-quite-5-foot-3 would allow. "I know you're after me and my dad, but I don't have time for this. Someone really special to me is sick, and I need to..."
"I'm not after you," she said. "At least not to arrest or detain. At this point."
"Huh? Then why'd you show up at my house?"
"Because of this."
She held up a thumb drive.
"The medical records of one Angel Beatrice Crawford."
"What the fuck?"
She glanced at the door to make sure it was closed.
"Reno Larson tossed this from his vehicle Monday morning."
"When Abadi was pursuing him?"
Sorsha nodded once. "Detective Abadi noted the general location, and last night I recovered the drive."
"The EMR number," I breathed and fumbled the card out of my pocket. "Reno had this."
Sorsha took the card and scrutinized front and back. "May I hold on to it? I'll give you an evidence receipt."
That's cool. You keep it."
Best not to lay official claim to the item I'd stolen from an impounded car I'd trashed.
"I have questions," Rachel said.
"As do we all,"
Dr. Nakis murmured. Rachel turned to me.
"Beatrice, your initials are ABC.
"Yes, and you have no idea how many times my dad sang the damned alphabet song to me when I was little."
I glanced toward the door to be extra super sure it was closed and noted that Kyle had slipped in at some point.
"Reno works for Christy," I said to Sorsha. "Do you think he was getting my file for her?"
She regarded me.
"Why would Dr. Charish want your medical records?"
Rachel raised an eyebrow.
"Why would anyone want your medical records, Angel? No offense."
"I have no freaking idea,"
I gave a strained laugh. "Unless Christy's super interested in the times my mom brought me to the ER because I was so clumsy." I maintained a smile even as my gut tightened at the old memories.
"And the time you overdosed," Rachel said with a slight shrug.
Dr. Nikas twitched at that, and I mentally crossed fingers Sorsha hadn't noticed. But surely she wouldn't be able to make any connection between my overdose and my becoming a zombie.
But what could be so important about the overdose incident for Christy to go to such lengths to see my records?
I dug my hands through my hair. "Well, whatever the reason, Christy didn't get them, so it's all good." Kyle spoke up.
"The hospital computer system crashed the day of Deputy Connor's death."
I tensed. "No, not good at all." Christy had been after my medical records, and Reno had failed her. She wouldn't have given up. Harlan Murtaugh was there. He's...
"I know who he is," Sorsha interrupted.
"Excuse me, I need to make a call."
She moved to the other side of the room and pulled out her phone.
"Agent Garner," she said quietly. "There was a system crash at the hospital on Tuesday during Connor's stay. Crawford said Murtaugh was there."
"Likely not a coincidence,"
Garner replied, his tone calm and easygoing despite the circumstances. "No stupid door to block my zombie hearing this time, or that of the other zombies in the room."
"My thought as well. Another attempt at Crawford's records."
"Agreed. I'll get the cyber people on it to confirm," he said. "Charish made another call to Saberton Ops 5 minutes ago. Gallagher's on standby if you need backup, and I just dispatched a team from Baton Rouge. But Charish is feeling the pressure, so act at your own discretion. Keep it contained, and a lid on the weirdness. The ball's in your court.
Dr. Nikus exchanged a worried look with Brian, while I tried to appear cool and collected. How much weirdness did she know about? The barest hint of a smile touched one corner of Sorsha's mouth.
Thank you, sir.
Brian stepped out of the room, phone to ear, calling Pierce, I was certain.
How did you know Reno was going to steal my medical records? I asked Sorsha after she hung up.
Sorsha folded her arms.
I didn't. He was a person of interest, and I had eyes on him. When he gained access to the hospital admin building, I attempted to detain him, but he fled, leading to the pursuit.
What does...
Sorsha cut me off with a brusque gesture and leveled her gaze at Dr. Nikus.
What connection does Dr. Charish have with the decapitation murders of 2 years ago? The serial killings?
Shit.
Christy had coerced Ed Quinn into killing zombies and delivering their heads to her. If Sorsha was sniffing close to her about that particular fucked up shitstorm, what else did she know? I was starting to regret that Pierce wasn't here with his experience in talking his way out of sticky situations. This was flypaper, honey, and road tar, all mixed up into one giant mess.
Dr. Nikus cleared his throat.
Connection. With the killings, I wasn't a suspect identified.
Yes, but that's not what I asked.
Sorsha watched him, expression placid and intimidating at the same time.
How is Christy Charish connected to the murders?
This time I sent him some of my lie-through-your-teeth juju. I certainly had plenty to spare.
I prefer not to answer that question.
No one moved or breathed. The only sound was the hum of a printer and the tick-tick of the wall clock.
Fair enough, Sorsha finally said. For now.
I released my breath and tried to steady my voice.
Does Reno's theft of my medical records somehow tie in to why you're asking about Christy and the serial killings?
She swung her attention to me.
It's funny how so many threads can weave into one big tapestry.
I swallowed to work some moisture into my throat.
So, have you figured out a link between Ed Quinn's victims and Christy?
Her eyes rested on each of us in turn before she spoke.
I believe I have.
Chapter 34. Everyone remained silent. No way would any of us come out and say, "You know about zombies then, right?" And sure, Sorsha clearly knew something about zombies, but I had no clue how much. I had an ugly feeling she suspected I was one. But what about the others? Finally, I couldn't stand it any longer.
"Well?"
Sorsha leaned against the table behind her, a casual pose that looked more like a cat preparing to pounce.
I have reasons to believe Dr. Charish was conducting, or intending to conduct, experiments on the victims' remains, namely their heads. Not long after Quinn was identified as the killer, Dr. Charish had contact with a Walter McKinney, aka William Rook, who is wanted on more charges than I can count, and who is believed to have committed murder and kidnapping at Dr. Charish's behest. She lowered her head. Eyes on me.
That's right, I said,
leaning against the table behind me in a doomed attempt to copy her stance. Last year, he kidnapped my dad to get to me. A tiny little mock frown puckered her forehead.
And why is that?
Why do you think? I challenged, and Mock frowned right back at her.
I'm asking the questions here, she replied evenly.
Well, I just asked you a question, so apparently I'm asking them too.
Behind her, Kyle gave me a warning head shake,
Yet I didn't miss the ever-so-slight flicker of amusement in Sorsha's expression. I allowed myself an instant of triumph, then pressed what little advantage I had. "Look," I said, "I overheard you asking Christy about zombies in the Gator Room. And back before Mardi Gras, you sure seemed fascinated by my zombie makeup, which had been my actual rotting flesh. Not to mention, you were awfully interested in the Zombies Are Among Us documentary that supposedly showed real zombies." Satisfaction filled her eyes.
"And what do you know of real zombies?"
I threw my hands up. "Are we seriously gonna keep beating around the bush? I know you know." Brian eased back into the room, tucking his phone away. Sorsha took a step toward me almost eagerly.
"And what do I know?"
I bared my teeth. "That I'm a zombie."
"You, I'm a monster. Look at me."
I raised my hands like claws and widened my eyes comically.
"Big, scary, brain-eating monster."
Dr. Nikas sank onto a stool, looking a little pale. Brian made a pained grimace.
"Jesus Christ, Angel," he hissed.
Sorsha didn't act the least bit surprised or disbelieving, confirming my hunch that she'd known all along.
"I never said you were a monster," she said mildly.
I dropped my hands and glared. "What am I to you, then? A menace? Do you think zombies need to be wiped out or detained for the safety of others?"
"I don't support genocide or unlawful incarceration."
Man, she was good at evasive answers. Yet it sounded like she was fine with zombies, or anyone, as long as we didn't break any laws. That looked great on the surface, except for one pesky detail. I'd broken a shit ton of laws, both minor and major, from defiling a corpse all the way up to murder. So, yeah, I was probably still fucked. Except that she seemed to be focused on Christy at the moment, and that was all right by me. "Fine," I said, coming to a decision. "You want to know the truth about the serial killer?"
"Angel."
Brian took a step toward me. "Can it, Brian?" I snarled. "Do you seriously think she won't figure it out? Hell, she knows most of it already." Dr. Nikas nodded once.
"It's all right, Brian. Angel, go on."
I gave him a grateful look, then returned my attention to Sorsha. "Yes, Ed Quinn murdered those people. And yes, they were all zombies. But he was manipulated and brainwashed by Christy to think zombies had killed his parents, and that all zombies were murderous monsters." I went on to explain how Christy had learned about zombies over a decade ago from Ed's parents, and after they died, her lies convinced Ed that his parents had been zombie hunters and that he needed to avenge them and honor their legacy by collecting zombie heads. "Christy wanted those heads for her own research," I said, "but she also wanted a real live zombie test subject. Me." Sorsha considered my words.
"Interesting," she said after a moment. "When you came out of the cooler earlier, you mentioned something about a double. Of whom were you speaking?"
"Christy Charish," I said. "I think she's been here since Monday. A jet came in to Tucker Point Airport that afternoon with one passenger, a brown-haired woman. Christy is blonde. No obvious connection, right? Wednesday at midnight, another jet arrived with a blonde woman who looked like Christy and a man who fit the description of her bodyguard, Fritz. In fact, it probably was Fritz. Soon after that, a brown-haired woman departed on the first jet. However, my source at the airport says it wasn't the same woman who arrived on Monday. I believe Christy came in on Monday wearing a brown wig. Then her double arrived Wednesday midnight, pretending to be Christy, and then put on the brown wig and left on the first jet. Her job done. Which means Christy was here before the LZ1 epidemic began. Brian shook his head, but I spoke before he could. I know you had eyes on her, Brian, but how close were they?
He hesitated. Apparently not close enough.
That matches my own intel, Sorsha said, surprising me with the nugget of information, and annoying me that she'd known all along.
Fritz Colton has been working for Dr. Charish for the last month, Brian said. He's a top-notch freelance security pro who's always with her public persona, whether Dr. Charish herself or her double in Chicago. That consistency strengthened the deception.
I wrinkled my nose and gave Christy the freedom to do her LZ1 lab work with no one the wiser. Sorsha regarded me.
And how are you connected to this epidemic, Angel?
The safe answer would have been that I was merely helping to find a way to save the victims. But I had a feeling Sorsha would know I wasn't telling the whole truth. I'm the source, I said, squaring my shoulders. For the original strain, that is. Everyone who's been infected after Deputy Connor has a mutated strain, LZ1. The original strain happened when I grimaced. No need to go into the whole bit about my addiction. My zombie parasite got damaged. Yeah, that was good enough. Anyway, Judd Seiler was hunting me because he knew I was a zombie. I bit him and got away, but he tracked me again the next day and got shot. I ran to the swamp because I thought Marla was on my trail. But then Judd came after me, dead. I mean, like, half his head was missing. So I, dispatched him. Total self-defense, you know? And then, I guess, the alligators ate his remains and ended up infected.
Who's Marla?
Sorsha asked. A German shepherd? She... A thought was banging around inside my brain, evading my efforts to pin it down. She's a cadaver dog. Wait, Dr. Nakis, what did Jacques tell you when he called? Dr. Nakis rubbed his face with both hands.
That upon close examination, the puncture point in the bite on Nick is larger and far more precise than that of a typical mosquito, and that it carries traces of both inert and activated LZ1, as well as Adius albopictus saliva. Damning enough on its own, but Jacques' subsequent analysis of the water bottles revealed the presence of certain proteins that can stimulate LZ1 into full activation. If Nick's presumed bite is representative of those on the other victims, I cannot help but accept that these are, in truth, inoculation sites.
Sorsha's eyes widened.
You believe it's being deliberately spread?
Dr. Nikas dipped his head in a sober nod. She typed a text message. Rachel muttered a curse. So, Dr. Charish and Saberton. I jerked a hand up. Wait. That damn thought was still bouncing around like a coke addict in a mosh pit. Just wait. Sorsha had been in town during Mardi Gras because of the Zombies Are Among Us short film. A film containing real zombie clips that Christy had given Rosario, her then lover, and Patsy, to pass on to the studio. Rosario, who'd nearly outed me with Marla at the Zombie Fest, where the short film had premiered to promote the movie High School Zombie Apocalypse, the movie that starred Justine, who had an ex-girlfriend sneaky and paranoid enough to bug her apartment. Sneaky. Christy could teach a masterclass in sneaky. She was the kind who would... Christy bugged Marla, I gasped.
The dog?
Sorsha asked with disbelief. Brian shook his head.
Angel, we scanned her along with everyone else.
But how thoroughly, though? I mean, Christy is smart enough not to use something that would be found on a superficial search. And maybe it would show up on an x-ray or something, but Marla would probably have to be sedated for something like that. And who would even think a deeper scan would be necessary on a dog? Brian didn't look convinced.
Dr. Charish had no way to know that Rosario and Marla would be brought into our fold.
Ah, Dante Rosario is with your lot, Sorsha asked. I'd wondered what happened to him. I thought he'd been disappeared permanently. Yeah, he's with us now, I said, then looked to Brian. And you're right. Christy had no way to ever know that he and Marla could possibly end up with us. She'd have bugged the dog to keep tabs on Rosario. Rachel bristled. Rosario told me how often he had to check in with her. That sounds exactly like something she would stoop to. Brian rubbed the back of his neck. And then she got unbelievably lucky when Marla came into our lab.
It explains how Saberton beat us out to the swamp, I said, and how Christy could have known about Douglas Horton and Deputy Connor. Marla stuck by Dr. Nikas a lot while...
Oh, shit. I looked to Dr. Nikas in growing horror. The blood drained from his face.
If so, she knows everything.
Everything we'd ever talked about, including mature zombies, and the fact that Pierce was actually Pietro. That's why she wanted you-know-who's blood. No wonder she'd cajoled Pierce into giving her a sample. Oh, fuck. The switched blood tubes. She knew about you-know-who, being you-know-what, so she watched closely enough to spot Jacques switch you-know-who's blood for mine. Then she had Harry Tech switch it back, so Jacques ended up with my blood instead of you-know-who's.
Dr. Nikas sighed. And that recently acquired knowledge explains why she wanted your medical records.
He paused and flicked a glance at Sorsha, clearly unwilling to say more in her presence. I turned to Sorsha. Hey, Agent Aberdeen, would you possibly consider yourself an ally to our kind? Her brow lowered.
As an FBI agent, I'm an ally to anyone who's been victimized.
I waved my hands. No, I mean you personally. I know the feds have all sorts of restrictions and guidelines. One side of her mouth tilted up slightly.
Actually, the task force I'm operating under allows its agents a good deal more leeway in dealing with special circumstances. However, speaking for myself, at this time, yes, you can consider me to be on your side, an ally.
I glanced at Dr. Nikas and got a micro nod, which I interpreted to mean his nose told him Sorsha was telling the truth. Awesome. Right back at you, I said to Sorsha, then pivoted to face Dr. Nikas. Why the hell did Christy want my medical records?
Because you have certain mature zombie factors, such as your ability to use a control bite, that might have been caused by your, unique blood chemistry at the time of your turning.
I made a face. Drugs. The many, many drugs I was on. But why would she care about that? He rubbed his mouth.
She hates us, but she envies us. And now I believe I know what her true purpose has been all along. I recently came across considerable research she had done on telomeres. I thought little of it until now. But I believe she is seeking a way to gain the benefits of being a mature zombie without having to, well, be a zombie first.
I stared at him. She wants to be immortal? And Dr. Nikas probably came across that research by snooping in her files. Good for him.
Is that possible?
Sorsha asked, surprised.
Whether or not it is, Dr. Nikas said. If Dr. Charish is attempting it, she must believe so.
Jesus, I breathed. She's a fucking psycho lunatic. She released this epidemic. But that means she has a cure, right? He met my eyes.
I would be shocked if she did not.
Then whatever she was testing at the gym had nothing to do with the cure, but it could have been part of her immortality research. My stomach clenched as another thought occurred to me.
She started the epidemic to have an unlimited supply of test subjects. She won't miraculously come up with the cure and bask in the glory until she's done with them. I gritted my teeth. And immortal.
Indeed, Dr. Naka said, eyes distant. With this new insight, I believe I know her process now. I had been assuming,
He trailed off, then strode to the whiteboard and began scribbling notes. Portia went to the computer near him and pulled up the latest cell culture data. The lab phone rang, but Dr. Nikas was already too absorbed to pay it any mind. Brian picked it up.
This is Archer.
He fell silent.
I see. Thanks.
He replaced the phone in its cradle.
Jacques says that Nick has begun moaning for brains.
My gut dropped to my toes. How much longer did he have before his body simply gave out? I turned to the others. We have to stop her, confront her, get the cure now. If she figures out we know what she's up to, she'll make sure we never get it.
I agree, Sorsha said. She's already spooked by my presence, and I've been in here with you long enough to make her worry. Last thing any of us needs is for her to destroy data.
She began to text another message. I'm informing my supervisor of the new development. I'll also let my partner know what's going down, but he's at least 20 minutes away. What about the backup team Agent Garner sent from Baton Rouge? I asked. Are they driving or coming by helicopter? She gave me a long look. I gave an innocent shrug. I have really good hearing?
Of course you do, she said dryly. Driving. Also at least 20 minutes away.
Rachel eyed Sorsha.
What about local law enforcement?
Too risky, Sorsha said quickly. Potential biohazard, right?
In other words, Sorsha was keeping the situation confined to her task force and a lid on the weirdness. That fit our zombie leave-us-alone agenda perfectly. Kyle spoke up.
We have enough personnel to confront her. Fritz and Dr. Charish are currently in the microscope room with two of her techs. The other two techs are right next door in histology. Both rooms are along the hallway around the corner, which means that Reno Larson, who has stationed himself outside those two rooms, has no line of sight on this lab or any of the other rooms along this corridor.
Sorsha folded her arms over her chest. Poor tactics on his part.
Quite, Kyle replied. Rachel and I need to stay with Dr. Nikas, Brian said, top priority.
Sorsha's eyes flicked from Kyle to me, as if assessing her resources.
Unorthodox joint operations are not unheard of in my task force. We know how to adjust the paperwork.
What the hell other weirdness did they deal with? Not that I minded. What's the plan?
Charish has two bodyguards and four lab techs. If she resists, and I do expect resistance, it will be dicey, even with your special zombie abilities in play.
Of course she knew about zombie special abilities. She also has Billy Upton, I pointed out.
He's one of mine, she replied.
No way. He seems way too sweet and innocent. Sorsha let out a dry chuckle.
And he uses that to his advantage.
Her phone buzzed with a text. She sobered as she read it.
Charish just made a call to Saberton Security. Agent Garner believes she asked for backup and extraction.
Which means we have to confront her right now, I said, anxiety rising.
It also means her backup might arrive before we're finished with her, she replied, mouth tight. That tilts the odds much more in her favor.
Except there was one unique zombie ability she didn't know about. What if we had our own special backup right here? I asked, smile growing. She and Kyle regarded me with matching doubtful expressions. Sorsha lifted an eyebrow.
And where is this special backup?
I grinned. In the Gator Room. Her other eyebrow went up.
Are you trying to tell me you wish to use the alligators as backup?
Trust me, I said, but we need to hurry. Let's go.
Hold on, Brian said.
He opened a drawer and pulled out pint-sized packets of brains, along with normal smaller ones.
Tank up and stock up.
Kyle stuffed small packets into his pocket and ripped the top off a big one. I did the same and gulped down the pint, half expecting the others to start a chorus of chug, 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 and a little disappointed when they didn't. I lowered the empty packet and let out a pleased sigh as the surplus of brains energized my muscles and tweaked my senses. Nowhere near as supercharged as with a combat mod, but the extra brains would give me the fuel I needed if this confrontation turned into a clusterfuck. Once Kyle and Sorsha were ready, I opened the door a crack, pleased to see the hallway was empty. Then I slipped out and ran as quietly as possible to the gator room, relieved to find Kyle and Sorsha right behind me. Within, the gators were lined up along the fence as if they'd sensed me coming. "Hello, darlings," I murmured. "Time to come out and play."
"Are you sure this is a good idea?" Kyle asked as I unlocked the gate. "You can't possibly have trained them in such a short time."
"I didn't train them." I pulled the enclosure door open. "I didn't have to. They know what I want and will do it for me." Sorsha looked ever so slightly uncertain, the first time I'd seen her look anything but cool and composed. But when the gators stayed where they were, she relaxed a bit. "I need Biggie and Tupac," I said, smiling when they lumbered forward and through the open gate. The six-footers and the rest of the smaller ones moved to follow, but stopped when I made a tisking noise. "No, I only need the grown-ups for this," I told them. "It might get dangerous." They stared up at me with forlorn expressions. I sighed. "Okay, y'all can come, but you have to stay out of the way." I crouched between the two big gators and rubbed their toothy jaws. "Let's get that bitch."
Chapter 35. "No hissing," I told the gators, voice low yet stern. "No bellowing. No noise, okay? We're being sneaky. Now let's do this." Head high, I started down the corridor, flanked by the two enormous reptiles. Man, if those bitches from high school could see me now.
Snick, snick, swoosh. Snick, swoosh. Snick, snick, swoosh.
I stopped, sighed down at my eager guardians. Claws and tails made more noise than I'd expected. "I stand by my decision to use the gators as backup," I whispered to the others. "But Rena will hear us coming. Kyle, can you go ahead and take him out?"
"Consider it done."
He loped noiselessly to the far corner, did a quick peek around, then disappeared from our sight. A second later, my zombie hearing picked up a soft oof, then silence. After a brief tense wait, Kyle reappeared and gave us the all clear.
"Nice," Sorsha murmured.
I grinned. "Yeah, Kyle gets shit done." I got my gator procession going again, striding with glorious reptilian purpose to Kyle.
"What did you do with Reno?" I asked him.
"Supply closet and zip ties."
"The techs in the histology room might hear us when we go to deal with Christy," I said. "We can help Billy take them out of action so it won't cause problems for us later."
Sorsha merely smiled. "If Billy needs the help, then by all means."
Once around the corner, Sorsha pulled the histology room door open. Both Tex and Billy looked over at her. Sorsha gave Billy a single short nod, then closed the door again. Several soft thuds, then nothing.
"I think he has it covered," Sorsha said.
"Nice," I murmured.
I slowed the gators as we approached the door to the microscope room. Kyle and Sorsha drew their guns. I took hold of the door handle, focusing on the gators and what I wanted them to do.
"On three," Sorsha whispered. "One, two, three."
I yanked the door open and stepped aside. Biggie surged forward with Tupac right on his tail, and Kyle and Sorsha following. I went in behind them. The smaller gators swarmed around my legs as I strode past computer stations and into chaos. Shouts and curses, gator bellows, the crash of glass. Within a few frenzied seconds, Fritz, Christy, Harry Tech, and Beardzilla were at bay against the far wall, hemmed in by the scanning electron microscope and the gaping jaws of man-eating zombie gators. "Hands where I can see them," Sorsha barked. The techs hurried to comply, and even Fritz had his gun drawn, but took his finger off the trigger and slowly lowered it to the floor. Christy shot him a murderous glare and began rapid-fire texting on her phone. "Drop the phone, Dr. Charish," Sorsha snapped. Christy made one more tap, then set the phone on the counter. "What is the meaning of this?" she demanded. "You're being detained for questioning, Dr. Charish," Sorsha said, keeping her gun on the four detainees, while Kyle gave them each a quick but thorough pat-down, removing an impressive number of weapons from Fritz's person. "This is ridiculous!" Christy cast a quick glance at the wall clock, checking to see how long until her reinforcements arrived. She sputtered with fury as Kyle zip-tied her hands behind her back, but she was smart enough not to resist. In short order, Kyle had all four detainees restrained and seated in a row in front of their gator guards. He retrieved Christy's phone from the counter, then passed it to Sorsha with a murmured, "Passcode locked." Sorsha nodded and slipped it into a pocket. "I'll be filing a complaint with the director of the FBI, Agent Aberdeen," Christy spat. "You go right ahead and do that, Dr. Charish." Sorsha gave Kyle a head tilt toward the hall, and he took up a position in the doorway to keep an eye out for trouble. "Turn over the cure, Christy," I ordered. Gator growls echoed my words. She widened her eyes in shocked innocence. "The cure? Are you mental? Ari and I are still working to find it." "Cut the crap," I said with a sneer. "I always knew you were evil, but I never thought you'd create a deadly epidemic for your own benefit. You started working on LZ-1 right after Rosario told you about Judge Shamblin, and you've been using a double to throw off the tribe's surveillance." Christy gave a little sniff. "Having a lookalike isn't a crime, but spying on me is. You zombies are the criminals." She glared at Sorsha. "They're the ones you should arrest, Agent Aberdeen." "I'll be sure to look into it," Sorsha replied with zero inflection. She holstered her weapon, then stepped back and began texting, managing to keep an eagle eye on the detainees while her thumbs flew over the phone screen. "Obviously, the tribe had good reason to spy on you," I told Christy. "And I know you bugged Marla. It's how you knew where to go in the swamp, and why you wanted my medical records as well as a certain person's blood."
"I beg your pardon?"
Her lips quivered as if holding back a laugh.
"Did you seriously just accuse me of planting a listening device in a dog? Oh my, that is rich."
She met my eyes. "I didn't bug the dog, Angel. I didn't need to. I put the pieces together because I'm smart." She snickered with a nasty edge that clearly said, "And you're not."
"Pierce Gentry was my informant in Saberton. Then, not only did he suddenly stop sending updates, but he inexplicably defected to the zombies' side, because, by some strange twist of fate, he'd actually been a zombie all along. And by some insane coincidence, this all happened in the same time frame when Pietro Ivanov miraculously escaped the New York lab, except, oh no, he then died in a plane crash." She rolled her eyes. "I'm boggled that anyone bought that ridiculous story. I went back to Gentry's latest physical exam and had no trouble confirming he most definitely had not been a zombie. It didn't take much for me to conclude that Pietro had the means to change forms, an ability I'd seen no evidence of in all my years of zombie research. Of course I wanted his blood."
"Fuck. That made sense. And now Sorsha knew what mature zombies could do, and that Pierce Gentry used to be Pietro Ivanov. I mentally crossed fingers she'd remain our ally and that the info wouldn't come back to bite us in the ass. Well, what about the swamp and the gator hunt? I asked, scowling. Sure was convenient y'all found the accident site and made it there before we did. Christy tilted one eyebrow up.
Winds and tides, you know. Science.
Crap. Same way Marcus had figured it out. Yeah, well, how'd you find out about Deputy Connor's collapse? Or Douglas Horton coming back to life? So you even knew to look for gators? She flicked a glance at the clock.
That was indeed via a bug, though not in the dog. It was where your people never thought to scan. In your darling boyfriend's car.
She gave me a mock pout.
The poor thing. I hear he's feeling a bit under the weather, along with all of his daddy's little survivalist friends. And daddy, too, before long.
I held myself back with sheer force of will, but the gators bellowed and snapped in response to my homicidal fury. I took grim pleasure in how Christy paled and squirmed back. She was spilling all the beans with an FBI agent present, which meant Christy felt certain of a timely rescue. I felt certain she was going to lose a few teeth before this was done. One way or another, I'm going to wring that cure out of you, I said through my teeth. Maybe I should let a gator have one of your hands, or a foot, maybe both. I don't think they've been fed yet today. Tupac growled deep and ominous. Harry Tech screwed his eyes shut, and the scent of hot piss hit my nostrils. Christy took a long look at the clock, then bared her teeth in triumph.
You'll be far too occupied with other matters very soon. A heavy whoomp shook the building.
What the hell was that? Sorcha demanded, even as the fire alarm started hooting. Christy batted her eyelashes.
I think your friends might need your help, Angel.
Kyle took off at a dead sprint toward the main lab. Go, Sorcha told me. I've got this. Don't let them leave, I ordered the gators, then raced after Kyle and activated a combat mod. Kyle had likely done the same, besides having a good head start on me. By the time I rounded the corner, he'd already made it to the main lab door. He yanked it open, stepping back as smoke and odd fog rolled out. Then he charged in. Farther down the hall, Reg burst out of the cell culture room and sprinted into the lab after Kyle. I poured on the speed and followed them in. The fog was already dissipating, and I realized it was a waterless fire suppression system used in places where water would fuck up sensitive equipment and computers. Not that it mattered. The computers were twisted, smoking heaps of plastic and metal. Cold nausea gripped me. Christy had blown them up to destroy data. I pushed back the sick fear and assessed the scene. Rachel was ripping apart the remains of a computer with her bare hands, blood running down her face from a long gash on her forehead. Brian had his back to me, with a dozen or more bits of shrapnel sticking out of it. He was trying to feed brains to Dr. Nikas, who had numerous gashes on his face and chest. Dr. Nikas, who was cradling a bleeding Portia. Oh God, Portia! I dropped to my knees beside her. She coughed, pink foam bubbling at her mouth.
Ari?
She wheezed.
I'm here, Portia,
he said, face contorted in pain and grief. Brian leaned close to me.
She was right by Christie's computer when it blew. The charges were small, but the pressure wave hit her hard.
I nodded, sick. That was how explosions killed you. A wave of pressure that battered your internal organs. She was going to drown in her own blood. You have to save her, Dr. Nikas, I told him. Begged him.
I don't know if I can,
he said, agonized.
The cancer. The injuries, and I will not without her consent.
You have to try. I took her hand, terrified at how light it seemed. Please, Portia, let him try and save you. She coughed again and brought up blood.
I,
Portia,
I wanted to squeeze her hand but didn't dare. You'd be a zombie, but you'd have a chance to live.
Ari. Yes, dear one. He touched her cheek. Yes. Give me the chance, she whispered. Give us the...
Her eyes lost their focus. Brian shoved two open brain packets at Dr. Nakis.
You have to heal before you do anything else.
He'd probably been trying to get the distraught man to take brains since the explosion. Dr. Nakis took both packets and devoured the contents, eyes never leaving the dying woman in his arms. He pulled her close and placed a gentle kiss on her forehead, then shifted to bite her trapezius. With a low growl, he gave a sharp tug to part the flesh, then went still, breathing softly through his teeth. What was he doing? Had he changed his mind about turning her? When I'd turned Philip Reinhardt and Andrew Saber, I'd slavered and shredded flesh like, well, a monster. But when I'd tried to turn Christie's next test subject, the instinct never rose. What if that was happening with Dr. Nakis? I clenched my hands together to keep them from shaking. Kang had told me my instinct failed because I'd recently turned Philip. But what if Dr. Nakis was exhausted and depleted from so much work? Or what if something else was wrong and he couldn't save her? Brian set Rachel's half-full container of fresh brain chunks beside Dr. Nakis. I unclenched my hands and forced myself to breathe. The next stage of turning required brains to help transfer and nourish the parasite. After I'd finished the rending and tearing stage with Philip and Andrew, I had chewed brains, then spat and bitten them into the numerous wounds I'd created. But Brian didn't look at all uncertain, which told me Dr. Nakis's behavior was normal. Maybe the process simply wasn't as gruesome for a mature zombie. Dr. Nakis released his bite hold on Portia's shoulder, still cradling her limp form close. He took a hunk of brain, chewed it, then clamped onto the wound again, all neat and tidy and controlled. If I hadn't known better, a casual glance would have made me think he held her in a lover's embrace. But was he cradling a dying woman, or one about to start a fresh life? Only time would tell. I looked away to give them a semblance of privacy as well as to distract myself. Kyle helped Rachel dismantle computers, removing hard drives and flash storage in the hopes of salvaging info. Reg gathered and organized scattered files with fierce efficiency.
What's the situation with Dr. Charish?
Brian asked. I turned to him. We have her locked down and... Long slivers of plastic were embedded in his left cheek and eye, injuries he'd clearly ignored while taking care of Dr. Nakis. Dude, you've got something on your face. I licked my thumb as if ready to wipe off a bit of dirt. He let out a strangled laugh.
Just need a little spit and toilet paper, and it'll come right off.
Seriously, you need to do something about that, I said. It's kind of freaking me out. The building trembled again with a smaller woof. Kyle and I exchanged a charged look.
Sorsha, I breathed.
The computer's in the microscope room.
Go. I got this,
Brian said in an unnerving echo of Sorsha. I lurched up and sprinted back the way I came. Smoke and fog seeped around the histology door and poured from the microscope room. At histology, I skidded to a stop and yanked the door open. You okay, Billy? I shouted through the fog, barely able to see him stagger to his feet.
10-4, he croaked.
I spun toward the microscope room even as Christy fucking Charish stepped out like a demon emerging from the bowels of hell, smoke curling around her and heralded by unearthly gator growls and wet snorts. She held her briefcase in her left hand and her right gripped a trank gun. Zombie tranks. Shit. This would be a really bad time to get dropped by one of the damn things.
Perfect timing, she breathed, and lifted the gun in my direction, finger tightening on the trigger.
I scrambled to evade, but even my zombie combat mod enhanced reflexes weren't going to be fast enough to counter my forward momentum. Kyle slammed into me, knocking me aside.
I crashed into the wall, then fumbled to grab him as he staggered, a trank dart sticking out of his shoulder. Except instead of going limp as if he'd been tranked, he began convulsing. I yanked the dart out, threw it aside, and hugged him close. "What the hell did you do to him, Christy?" I yelled. She dropped the empty trank gun.
"Well, I was hoping for you to be my test subject, but he'll have to do."
"To test what?" Kyle was jerking harder now. I lowered him to the floor, then tried to pull his gun from his holster with no success.
Fuck.
It was a retention holster, and I didn't know the right sequence of moves to get the gun free. "What's happening to him?"
"Behold, the other part of my project," she said with a nasty smile.
"What, your stupid immortality shit?" Christy shrugged.
"That one's not quite ready, but I'll crack it soon enough. This," she lifted her chin toward Kyle, "is so I don't have to deal with you lot for the rest of eternity. My anti-zombie serum, or more precisely, a real zombie serum."
She let out an ugly little chuckle, while I struggled to keep Kyle from hurting himself.
"You fed aversion to poor patient 9 at the gym?"
"You said that patient wasn't supposed to die," I said, voice shaking with rage.
"He wasn't, but I learned oh so much from him, tweaked the formula."
She checked her watch.
"In a few minutes, the parts of Kyle Griffin's brain that make him a thinking, feeling person will be permanently disabled, devolving him into a true, traditional zombie. Mindless, obedient, and just intelligent enough to be trained for menial work. Won't that be nice?"
She looked behind me as Billy stumbled out of the histology room.
"Have fun with the new Kyle," she sang,
and hurried off in her stupid wedges toward the roof stairs, probably to wait for a helicopter extraction. Billy staggered up to me.
"I'll get her."
"No.
Check on Sorsha."
I prayed that Christy hadn't killed her.
"I don't hear a chopper yet. Christy can't go anywhere."
Billy glanced in the direction of the stairs, then jogged unsteadily to the microscope room.
"She's alive, but needs a medic," he hollered a few seconds later. "Calling now."
Kyle's convulsions calmed to tremors. One hand gripped my arm like a claw.
"Angel,"
he stuttered. "Dr. Nikas can fix this, Kyle," I said, struggling to keep my voice steady.
"It's going to be okay. He can stop this before it causes permanent damage."
Christy had probably laced her serum with something that anesthetized the parasite so the toxin could do its nasty work. It was what I'd do if I was an evil psychopath neurobiologist. He needed a parasite stimulant. Now.
"Another combat mod," I said. "That may slow the effects of the serum down and buy you time."
I reached for his mod port, but he pushed my hand away.
"No. I'm ready to go."
"Where?"
"I don't want to be cured. Please. Please.
My shoulders sagged as I realized what he meant.
"Oh. Please."
Brian had turned him zombie against his will and stolen death from him. A death Kyle yearned for. And last year, I had promised him that, when the time came, I'd help him die. It seemed a relatively easy promise to make back then, in the comfort of a posh New York hotel. But now I was faced with the reality.
"All right,"
I said, words barely a squeak.
"I need your gun."
It wasn't easy to kill a zombie, but a few ways were permanent. The tremors were beginning to ease, but I suspected that meant the toxin was starting to do its work.
"Retention holster," he slurred. "Twist right, tip forward and pull."
Tears spilled over as I twisted and pulled in the right sequence to remove his gun from the holster. His grip on my arm loosened, and his eyes struggled to focus on mine. Yet his face was smooth with soul-deep relief.
He'd been ready for this for a long time.
Thank you, Angel.
Anytime, dude, I said, trying for humor but choking on a sob.
It's been an honor and pleasure to know you.
A soft smile touched his mouth, and then he rolled face down and tucked his chin to his chest. The honor and pleasure has been all mine, I gasped out past the tears. The gun was a Beretta M9, a model I was familiar with from training with him. I checked to make sure a round was chambered and the safety off, then pressed the muzzle to the base of his skull and looked away. Goodbye, Kyle. I pulled the trigger. The sound crashed through the corridor and brought Billy at a run.
What the hell?
Though he didn't reach for a weapon, he held himself loose and balanced, a ready stance like I'd seen in my jiu-jitsu instructors. Billy knew how to handle himself. I dropped the magazine and cleared the chamber, then set the gun beside Kyle's body and lifted my hands away from my body. Are you going to arrest me? He took a slow step forward.
Why did you shoot him?
Because I promised him I would. He searched my face.
I see.
Do you? I said. Because if you're not going to arrest me, I need to chase down the bitch responsible for all of this. The distant thwop thwop of a helicopter reached us. Christie's extraction. He nodded once.
Go do what you gotta do.
I appreciate it. I activated my last combat mod and took off for the stairs, glancing into the microscope room as I passed. The computer stations were slagged wreckage. Sorsha was crumpled on the floor. Someone was huddled on the counter. The back wall was splattered with blood, and the gators were in a frenzy. Feeding. On what? Or who? I couldn't tell. I tore into the stairwell, vaulted the steps three at a time, and burst out onto the roof, teeth bared in a snarl. Christie stood on the far side, shading her eyes toward a helicopter that was still several hundred yards away. She startled as the door slammed open against the outer wall, then shot me a furious glare. You lost, she yelled. Accept your fucking defeat already. Like hell. Give me the motherfucking cure. She laughed, clearly enjoying the moment immensely. Not until after your boyfriend is dead. Then I'll just have to take it from you. I broke into a run even as gunfire spat from the helicopter door. Chips of concrete flew up around me, and a bullet whizzed by my ear. I kept my focus on my target and picked up speed, ignoring the jolts of pain as two bullets found their target. I was still able to run, so they didn't matter. Her arrogant sneer crumbled as I rapidly closed the distance between us. Her eyes widened in mounting panic. She shifted her weight to evade even as I corrected for it. I hit her low, knocked her off balance, wrapped my arms tight around her legs and waist, lifted her off her feet, and kept running. Christie screamed and struggled as she realized my intent, but it was too late. A 3-foot wall surrounded the perimeter of the roof, and I leaped, planted one foot on top of it, and pushed off to sail out into the open air. I tucked my head against her chest. Her scream vibrated against my cheek. The ground came up fast. I yanked my arms back to avoid getting them crushed. The ground slammed into us, cutting off Christie's shriek. My Christie cushion went crack, crunch, pop, and pain sliced through my ribs and right knee and ankle. Slowly, I lifted my head, feeling the creak of bone and tendons throughout my poor, abused body. I'd expected to land on the parking lot, but apparently I'd launched us off the back of the building to land on hard dirt just beyond a line of bushes. Didn't matter. The fall from a 3-story building was enough. And probably best we hadn't landed in the parking lot, considering the lot would surely be filled with people from the evacuated building. Thwop, thwop, thwop. The helicopter overhead. Hovering. I forced myself to roll off Christie to stare upward.
The pilot, wearing headset and sunglasses, peered down at us, mouth set in a scowl. I braced myself for bullets to spit from the open door, followed by Saberton thugs rappelling down to finish me and rescue her. But to my relief and glee, the door slid closed, and the helicopter zoomed off. Mission aborted. I gave the departing chopper a shaky middle finger, then groped for a brain packet. Christy wheezed in a ragged breath and let it out in a moan. I gulped down the brains and welcomed the tingle of healing.
"You're dying, you sacco," I rasped, then pushed up to one elbow and dragged her briefcase to me.
Though it was locked, a little brain-powered force got it open. But the only contents were a medical magazine with her face on the cover and a list of celebrity agents. Nothing that could possibly be a cure or even a hint toward one.
"Fuck you, you worthless sack of skin."
I didn't regret taking Christy for a short and fast flight. She never would have told me what the cure was. Not when she'd infected Nick and Bear and countless others on purpose. I only wished I could have drawn her end out more, made her suffer. Because unless we came up with a miracle, Nick was going to die. Something moved in my periphery. I jerked up to a crouch.
"It's all right, Angel," Kang said.
He moved to Christy's side, dropped to one knee, and peered into her face as she moaned and coughed blood.
"What are you doing?"
I asked, eyes narrowed. "Don't turn her. Is that what you're going to do?" Kang leaned close to her bleeding head and inhaled her scent.
"No, Kang, don't save her. She's the last person in the world who needs to be a zombie."
Kang got to his feet and pushed through the bushes, then picked up something I couldn't see at the foot of the building.
"Kang, please don't."
"Chill, Angel."
He returned to Christy and slammed.